Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. The House Finance Committee has scheduled a hearing on the state budget, signaling lawmakers may be getting closer to wrapping up the legislative session. The hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. Governor Lincoln Chafee has proposed a budget with no major tax increases and a reduction in corporate taxes. The budget would also increase funding for public schools and public colleges and universities. Lawmakers usually make some changes to the governor's budget before passing it and then wrapping up the legislative session. The State House of Representatives is also scheduled to take up the Casino Gambling Crime and Punishment Bill tomorrow. As Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick reports, passage would pave the way for a pivotal moment in the history of gambling in Rhode Island.
Provided the House passes the Gaming Crime and Punishment Bill, Twin River will become the first full-fledged casino in modern Rhode Island history Wednesday when it launches table games like blackjack, craps, and roulette. Dealers practiced over the weekend with a select group of invited guests. Twin River has installed 66 tables and has hired some 500 dealers for the launch of the table games. Craig Skoulos, the vice president and general manager of Twin River, expects daily crowds, already numbering some 15,000, to swell.
It's excitement, it's energy, a little bit of nervousness from a property standpoint. The past 6-7 months, we've been dealing with design and architecture, and nitty-gritty renovation. And as we roll into the opening, what was on paper now becomes real.
Running the table games operation is Kevin Brown, who learned the casino trade in Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, it was good for me for a certain amount of time, and now it's time to, you know, try something different, and here I am.
Twin River already generates $300 million a year for the state. Table games are expected to add about $15 million a year to that sum. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Friends and family are mourning the death of a 12-year-old girl who was killed by gunfire in Providence this weekend. Police say the shooting happened around midnight on Saturday. The shooter apparently opened fire on a group of people gathered outside a home in the capital city. The identity of the 12-year-old victim is being kept private. And in Massachusetts, abortion has emerged as an issue in the U.S. Senate race between Democrat Edward Markey and Republican Gabriel Gomez. As Jack Lepiarz reports, the two candidates are in the final week before a special election to fill the Senate seat vacated when John Kerry became Secretary of State.
Republican Gabriel Gomez and Democrat Ed Markey found several areas of agreement during a candidates' forum at Roxbury Community College. But when it comes to the Supreme Court, Markey says he could never support a nominee who would consider overturning the Roe v. Wade abortion decision.
I just believe that is the role of Massachusetts. We have to go down and make sure that a woman's right to choose is not undermined.
Gomez, though, rejects any litmus test.
You should vote on the person based on they follow the Constitution, if they're ethical, and they've done a good job.
Gomez says although he is personally opposed to abortion, he does not support any legislation that would restrict access to it.
That's Jack Lepiarz reporting from Boston.
Just about every state in New England, and especially Rhode Island, could benefit from robust two-party political competition. Our state's General Assembly has 113 members. Only 11 caucus with Republicans. There are no Republicans representing the Ocean State in Washington, and no political figure from the Republican Party holds any statewide office. No Republicans serve in the U.S. House from any New England state, and our six-state region has just 2 U.S. senators, one from New Hampshire, the other from Maine. Since Bill Clinton's 1992 presidential victory, every New England state has voted Democratic in every presidential election, except for the freak New Hampshire result in 2000, when George W. Bush beat Al Gore by about 7,000 votes in a state where 25,000 cast ballots for third-party candidate Ralph Nader. It wasn't always this way. Let's stroll down political history lane to 1960, when Democrat John F. Kennedy won a milestone presidential victory to become the first Roman Catholic to capture the White House. In that election, there was a clear New England line of demarcation. All you had to do was pull out a map and draw a pretty straight line from Bennington in western Vermont to Portsmouth in eastern New Hampshire. It was a Republican-Democratic Mason-Dixon border. The three rural, Protestant, and agricultural states in the north, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, were rocked-rib Republican. They all went for Republican Richard Nixon. the three southern industrial urban Catholic New England states of Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Massachusetts all supported Kennedy. In that era, religion and ethnicity were much bigger factors than they are five decades later. It was hard to get a Catholic, a Protestant, and a Jew to agree on anything, much less politics. Now, years of interfaith marriage, our region's high educational attainment compared to the rest of the nation, and the long legacy of social and workplace assimilation among the sons and daughters of European immigrants have changed things. What has happened is a loosening of the grip that the Catholic clergy held on parishioners. The most vivid example of this in Rhode Island is the same-sex marriage legislation approved by our overwhelmingly Catholic General Assembly, despite vocal opposition from the state's Catholic hierarchy, particularly Bishop Thomas Tobin. On the hot-button social issues and women's rights topics that so rile Southern and Sun Belt states, New Englanders seem to have adopted a live-and-let-live attitude. All six states now recognize gay marriage, and debates over abortion rights, gun control, and immigration are tame here compared to other sections of the country. Maybe all you have to know is that Vermont, once reliably Republican, supported President Obama in 2012 with his highest vote margin of any state in the continental United States. Republican candidates in New England run away from the positions of a national Republican Party in thrall to religious evangelicals, Tea Party activists, gun rights devotees, and oil and gas state interests. The current Massachusetts Senate race is a prime example. The Republican candidate, Gabriel Gomez, is running against Democratic congressional lifer Ed Markey. Gomez seems to denounce his national party at every turn. He said in a recent debate that he was ashamed that only four Republican senators voted for stricter gun control, and added that he felt the same way about Republicans who deny climate science. Former Senator Scott Brown tried to distance himself from his party in last year's election, but still lost to Democrat Elizabeth Warren in cobalt blue Massachusetts. It's become difficult to figure out what New England Republicans can do to change all this. Rhode Island's new state Republican chairman Mark Smiley told us recently that the party needs to field stronger candidates and better communicate with voters. Republican House Leader Brian Newberry of North Smithfield, a thoughtful young lawyer, told us much the same thing, but acknowledged that it sounded trite. All is not lost in Rhode Island. The GOP does have a competitive candidate for governor next year in Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, and Warwick Mayor Scott Avedisian is also a popular mayor from a vote-rich community. But until Republicans in the region get the message that New Englanders these days are more in sync with each other politically than we are with the rest of the country, they're probably doomed to the dustbin of defeat.